This is Soulful Living on Empower Radio. Here's your host, Terry Williams.
Hey, wherever you are in the world today, I welcome you to another 30 minutes of Soulful Living here at Empower Radio. I am a self-proclaimed social activist. So what does that mean? Well, you know, I looked it up and I'm going to start with the word soul, right? Merriam-Webster says, the definition of soul is the immaterial essence, animating principle, or actuating cause of an individual life. I think of it as the individual essence of every being that moves with them from lifetime to lifetime and represents the spirit of who they are, who we are. And their individual spirituality. I'm not going to get into a big chunk on spirituality, but to me, spirituality is really how we show up in the world to become more loving, more kind, and compassionate beings. So now the definition of the activist from vocabulary.com. An activist is a person who campaigns or takes determined action, that I added that part, for some kind of social change, social. I call it soulful. Again, as a self-proclaimed soulful activist and shamanic practitioner, every day I take determined action in support of the souls on this planet. Sometimes it's in support of an individual, and sometimes it's in support of a group or a cause, and I do so with the utmost love, kindness, and compassion. That is not the case with all beings. With everything going on in the world today, from politics to human rights, I read something that triggered me deeply just this morning. There can be anger and frustration. So how can we participate without letting our emotions get the better of us? My guest today, award-winning author William Martin, who actually likes to be called Bill Martin, will share some insight into how we might be able to incorporate the teachings of the Tao Te Ching into our life to bring more peace to ourselves and the planet, hey, in my world, and the cosmos. So welcome to Soulful Living, Bill.
It's my pleasure.
You know, I was doing some research on your bio, and I absolutely loved reading that you and your wife kind of packed up everything and took off many years ago and hit the road. My husband and I talk about that all the time. So I'm patting you on the back, and I'm going to go back and read more and live vicariously through you, because you're also in Oregon now, right?
Yeah, no, we're in Northern California.
No, Northern California. So you went to Oregon and then Northern California,
yes,
correct?
Yes, right.
Okay, I got it.
Right.
Yeah, and those
are... Oregon was the breakaway.
Yeah, so that must have been an amazing journey.
It was quite a journey. What's that? Probably about 15, 16, 17 years ago now.
Wow.
And we left our professions, got everything that we owned into an 8x5 U-Haul trailer and headed north. We were living in Arizona at the time.
And I know you have children. I read along the way that you had children. How old were your children at that point?
They were both grown.
Okay, adults.
Chronologically grown.
Yes, awesome. That's a good way to put it. I love that, chronological. I have 5 chronologically grown children, and as I walked into the studio today, I looked at Nate and I just said, oh, wow.
I'm sure if my father were alive, he'd call me chronologically grown, too.
Even at our age, right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, me too. Okay, so, and that is when you became aware or more deeply engaged in the teachings of the Tao. Is that correct?
Yes. That's when I began writing about them. I'd been aware and immersed in the Tao Te Ching for... at that time for 30 years and going on 50 years now, or at least almost that. And it had always, ever since I was an engineer with the Navy and a martial arts instructor, saw that I wasn't doing real happily well with the hard martial arts, asked me if I'd like to learn Tai Chi, which is a soft meditative art. And I said, I'd love to. And then he gave me a little book. And he said, this Tai Chi is the physical expression of what's in this book. And the book was the Tao Te Ching. And it's been in my life ever since. I haven't known exactly what to do with it or where it fit because there's, you know, it's not a formal religion. It's not, it has no real beliefs. It's just a deep, deep earth-centered philosophy. And I finally, kind of as I broke free, I started to write about it. And the first book I wrote was The Parents' Tao Te Ching.
Mm-hmm.
And that remains my bestseller, and it came out of my ability as a single parent to do everything wrong in parenting my children and to come to terms with it. I just, you know, did not know what to do, and they turned out fine anyway. And I began to realize that I didn't have nearly the control over other people that I would have liked to have had, and then began to see the teachings of the Tao Te Ching as being very helpful to parents. So I wrote that book. And then I've written, you know, a lot of books since.
Well, one of my favorite books is The Tao of Pooh.
Oh, yes. I'm mine too.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. And it was actually shared with me by one of my nephews when he was in South Korea in the service. I find it interesting that that's when you were first introduced to the Tao.
Yeah.
And I love that book. There's so much insight in that. And of course, anybody that's a Winnie the Pooh lover can relate to that, right?
He captured the essence of Taoism with Winnie there. He really did.
Yeah, he really did. And so on to where you are today. You know, I mentioned my being a self-proclaimed social activist.
That's but a nice
your
description.
Thank you. But your work, your latest book, The Activist's Tao Te Ching, really pulls together some deep insight by breaking it down and then, of course, your own comments on it. And how did you come to relate that to today's activism?
Through my own struggles. You mentioned the Tao of Pooh, and who was the author, Hoff?
I think so. Nate's going to look that up for us.
I apologize to him for not remembering that. But he captured the kind of the quietest element of Taoism in Winnie.
Mm-hmm.
The go with the flow, the take things as they come, the sort of relaxed and open, accepting attitude toward life, which is a huge essential part of Lao Tzu's teachings.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also in every chapter, in every 81 chapters of this short poetic book, there's a kernel of social transformation that if we begin to live according to the flow of the Tao, social institutions and forms would transform.
Mm-hmm.
They would no longer be recognizable. Because Lao Tzu was at his heart a social critic.
Mm-hmm.
He lived about 2,600 years ago and at a very tumultuous time in China, period of the Warring States, when power was being centralized in the cities among a handful of very wealthy people.
Mm-hmm.
And rules were paramount. The Confucian idea of duty to the state was being used by the state as to kind of transform society into a top-oriented society instead of the rural society it had been.
Mm-hmm.
And Lao Tzu was a strong critic of this, and he was considered by the government at the time as one of the first. He was a hippie. He was a no good. He was not the person you wanted your children to associate with. And some historians think of him as the first anarchist because he believed that in the hearts of just ordinary people is the ability to govern themselves with compassion and order and with a minimum of rules and regulations.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I love the quietest part of Lao Tzu's teachings. So for many years and even decades, I was soothed by the ability to go with the flow, to become more Winnie the Pooh-like.
Mm-hmm.
But in the last 5 or 6 years, you have to just be deaf and blind not to see the cliff toward which our society is heading, and the chaos and injustice and frustration of our social systems. And I try to, you know, kind of close my eyes and think of pretty things like bunnies and flowers, and, you know, that's just not a Taoist way of doing it. That's a caricature of the relaxation of the Tao.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are times in Lao Tzu's Taoism when if you relax and are quiet and see clearly what the flow and the energy and the spirit of the universe is doing, you realize that it's in one of those phases of immense change and transformation. And your best option then is to cooperate with and ride those waves of change and cooperation.
And so, witness it. And now,
yes.
Right? And witness it
compassionately. Compassionately. It's what's happening. And our what I see is our part in it is to bind up the wounds and soothe and comfort and reassure the wounded people who are naturally going to be wounded as a result of this transformation. You don't change from one paradigm to another without immense difficulty and wounds.
Mm-hmm.
And the Taoist role in that is to ride the waves with a sense of compassion. And so in the last 5 or 6 years, I've realized that I can't just sit here on my beautiful forested mountainside and watch the Tao move through the trees, because the Tao is moving in lots of other ways too.
Mm-hmm. And do you feel like it's a return to balance, you know, because
absolutely.
Because we are, it's out of balance, you know.
Yeah.
You said earlier, you know, you can't help but witness it. It is out of balance, whether it's because of what we see, you know, the fast-pacedness, I use that, of the internet and Facebook and you know, 24-hour CNN and Fox News. You can't help but see what's happening in the world around us. So would you say that this is a way of coming back to balance?
It very much is a sense of restoring balance. The Taoist thought has always been characterized by the yin-yang symbol,
mm-hmm.
you know, the curved white flowing into the curved black and then back into the white.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an attempt to represent these forces in constant motion, that everything is always in a dynamic balance rather than a static balance. It's not the balance of a teeter-totter. It's the balance of a spinning wheel. And being at the center of that wheel and allowing the flow to occur is the kind of balance he talks about. Mm-hmm. I wrote in Chapter 77 that we're in the Tao Te Ching, he talks of balance. The way of the Tao is balance. Where there is too much, it takes away and gives. Where there is too little, it takes away and gives to where there is too little. The way of society is otherwise. Where there is too much, it adds even more by taking from where there is too little. This is madness. This is the way we use our resources. We add to where there is too little and withhold from where there is too much. In this, we are like the Tao and will never be depleted.
Mm.
And it's not a question of communism or capitalism. It's most of our evolutionary history was as small wandering tribes or small settled villages. And we just naturally cared for one another. And we found our place within the village, and we depended on one another and cooperation and balance in order to survive. And so sharing and caring were not moral virtues. They were just natural. They were the essence of who we are.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to be taught and conditioned by huge social forces over a long period of time to become as isolated and individualistic and separate and fearful as we are now. And Lao Tzu was a rural idealist. He felt that people operate best in small back to that or not, the truth is still that smaller
kind of like communities and communes.
Yeah, smaller communities are much more easy to discover a sense of balance and cooperation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and you see that, you know, in some of the sci-fi movies, and that you see, like, when they, not that we're even saying that it's close to the end of the world or the end of humanity.
Yeah.
We hope that that's not what's going to transpire here. But, you know, you see that where when they talk about the end of the world or these huge transitions mm-hmm. and shifts, where small communities start to come together and rework
the
model that we have been taught. I mean, we grew up in this. This is what we were taught. And, you know, I mentioned that I'm a shamanic practitioner, and one of the things that really drew me to this work and to the people that I work with now was because it was like a tribe. It was like, like you were talking about the tribes connecting and supporting the community. And it actually brings me a sense of overwhelming fulfillment
mm-hmm.
when I'm with these people, because we just work together. There's nobody that's, you know, greater or less than the other, no matter where they are in life. And we work together, we support each other without question. And it's a beautiful teaching. And it's one of the things that I've absolutely loved about reading your work. Again, listeners, I'm having a conversation with William Martin. When you pick up his work, you'll want to find William Martin, although I did introduce him as Bill. And all of his information will be here at the Soulful Living page on Empower Radio. And I went through this quickly, and then I went back through it, and I highlighted some of the chapters that meant the most to me, and one of them was that balance, so I'm so glad that you brought that up. Another one was to lead with humility, chapter 66. I thought that was beautiful and kind of shed some light on individuality as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Can I read that one?
Yeah, I would love for you to.
Leaders in this movement must stay out of the way. The more leaders try to lead, the bigger obstacles they become. When people are ready for transformation, all a leader needs to do is carry water. The greatest leaders throughout history have led with quiet humility. Their names are unknown. Their honor is great.
And so
does that sound anything like the current election?
No, absolutely not. And that's what I was thinking about. Of course, you can't help it. Listeners, if you delve into this, you'll find correlations between everything that's going on within the world today. But yeah, because where is the quiet humility?
Mm-hmm. Well, the good news is that the quiet humility is unnoticed, because that's the way it works. And all around the world, in our country and others, right now, there are the leaders who are unnoticed, who don't even know that they're leaders, because they've got that ability to sense what a group of people deeply needs to do, mm-hmm. and the ability to help them do that. And there's another great chapter in Lao Tzu where, in the original language, was when the people finish a job, they say, we did it ourselves.
Mm.
When the people working under a true leader finish the job, they say, we did it ourselves.
Mm.
And that's what a true leader does. And the optimistic part of me thinks that these kind of people are all around.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. I think they're all around. It's in every aspect of humanity, and that the more that they step into it and walk, more people will walk with them.
Yeah. A big part of me believes that, you know, if I talk about revolution, it won't be so much an overthrowing of the current systems. It's just all of a sudden the current systems will look around and see that nobody's playing anymore.
Mm-hmm. And I think slowly but surely here in the U.S. that is happening. So would you consider yourself a revolutionary?
Yes, I would. I would consider myself a quietist revolutionary.
Mm-hmm.
Quietist in the sense that quietism is, by definition, is an acceptance of things as they are. Because Taoism is very similar to Zen Buddhism, mm-hmm. in the sense that that Lao Tzu would say, what is, mm-hmm. what is not, that's the way it is. And until you have that deep sense of a quiet acceptance of what is, you aren't able to see clearly what the next step is. Mm. Too many activists and revolutionaries have a sort of a half-formed idea of something they'd like to see happen, and they devote their energies to it and see enemies at every side and don't really see a clear picture of what's actually going on.
Mm-hmm.
Until we really quietly sit for a long enough period of time to see what's going on, we don't know the helpful next step. But once we see it, then the Tao acts with immense energy and power. It's like a river being released from a dam, and transforming energy occurs. So quietist in the sense of acceptance and waiting to see, activist and revolutionary in the sense of once you see, move.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm a revolutionary. I wear a Che Guevara t-shirt under my regular shirt just to remind me of the cost of revolution. Not that I'm a violent revolutionary, but just kind of a symbol of that sense of ready to commit my life to a revolution.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it brings me to chapter 64 in your book, A Small Step, right? We can take a small step.
Uh-huh.
And would you like to read that one as well?
I'll be glad to.
Thank you.
The only step necessary on the road to transformation is the one right here, right now. It is a small step, easily taken. It requires only the willingness to lift the leg and extend the foot a few short inches ahead, then transfer the weight. Easy. Now, do it again. So that's a famous aspect of Lao Tzu's teaching. In his original work, it was translated as the journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step.
Mm-hmm. I remember that quote beautifully, perfectly. Well, we are coming down to the wire here, and there's two things I want to ask. But first, I would like to know, what do you hope that the readers, listeners, will take away from the activist Tao Jing?
A sense of confidence. I hope that my fellow quietists who are looking for a sense of centeredness and peace will discover an inherent activism. And I hope that my fellow activists who are getting burnt out and discouraged will find a sense of quiet confidence.
I love that. And I want to remind people that activism, which has been much of our conversation here, isn't necessarily being that one that's, jumping out in front of the whole crowd screaming and yelling, right? It is that quiet sense of simply doing what's right and taking that first step.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so listeners, again, I've been chatting with William Martin, and somewhere in our conversation we talked about the Tao of Poo, and you thought that it was Huff, and you were absolutely right. It was written by Benjamin Huff.
Good.
And I am actually going to grab the parents Tao Te Ching for some people I know that are going to be parents soon.
Oh, good.
I'm super excited about that. Thank you
very much. Wonderful.
And I love for my guests to leave the listeners with something that they can take out into the day to elevate their soul, to change their life in some way. What would that be for you?
It would be chapter 23, keep things in perspective and live as if the world we want has already come to be. that our words and actions express the essence of the changes we may never live to see. Nothing we create will last. It will have its place and disappear, so let's build it with joy, establish it with compassion, and hold it in our open hands.
Mm, that's beautiful. And I love what you wrote, because I'm looking at it right now. You said, clinging to our work will constrict its effectiveness. Clinging to our ideas will limit their scope. Clinging to our forms and structures will make them into the very institutions we have vowed to leave behind.
Yeah.
That is perfect.
Just a note, these are all my words. I didn't translate the Tao Te Ching for this. I just took the essence of each chapter and wrote my own poetry.
And I loved it. I thought it was beautiful. Absolutely okay. Beautiful.
Just don't want poor old Lao Tzu to get blamed for something I said.
Oh no, he's grateful.
I'm grateful to him.
I feel like he's very grateful. So thank you so much for being here with
me today.
It's a pleasure. And I look forward to doing this again in the future.
That'd be my pleasure.